just a moment to dial in and welcome those who are out on Podbean listening and downloading. We appreciate you out there as well. And Michael has joined us, so I'm going to say welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted and honored that you're here once again to join us in this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness, and in particular, our work with the book Enlightenment, which is what we published so far from the Kabor's manuscript. So delighted you're here to be with us, and Miss Jean, I'll check first and see if you have any questions from any of our external sources or anything happening in the chat room. Anybody with a hand up and phone queue?
No, it's all quiet on this end, and I think we've addressed all the emails and the comments that we've received from the app, and there's nothing going on in the chat room, so I'd say just go for it.
Cool. So we're in the dictionary, toward the back of the book, page 76, and looking at definitions of words, and then we're going to move forward and go through the select passages where those words are applied. And I guess let's just start right at the top of page 76. A root word, EEK in Aramaic, speaks of a mindset, or a lot of the Aramaic language, a la translation, and this translation work was done by, back in the 70s actually, by 25 of the world's top Aramaicists, and the objective was to establish the first century meanings of the Aramaic words. It's interesting, some translations, or what purport to be translations of the Aramaic, actually were done by folks who were set in a Greek-oriented so-called Christian atmosphere, and then went back to the Aramaic and started to translate and brought all of that information, all of those brain cells with them. So what we're looking to do is to get a fresh look at all of the individual words and then ultimately end up with what are the tools, what are the processes that Yeshua presented for working through the generational patterns, the cultural patterns of hostility or fear, and arriving back at the place where we truly function as human beings. And our definition of a human being is one that is extremely difficult to capture in any language, and so we suggest an experiential definition. And if we look at, you know, how people are functioning in the world, we're looking at people who are pretty much tainted. You know, one of my favorite expressions, and it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's actually really more literal, is that by about the age of 4, in this culture, most everybody is so enculturated in blame that they are literally very devout, card-carrying members of the one world universal religion of blame. And so in blame, we don't find human life. Human life is made, we're told, by the ancient teachings in the image and likeness of love. And then, and this is the best definition I've been able to come up with for a human being, and that is just hold one that hasn't been tainted by all the garbage of the world, that hasn't been enculturated, that hasn't been brainwashed, that hasn't been made an object of desire by the culture or by people in the culture. So hold a newborn. Go back to the moment, you know, if you've already done that, and hold a newborn child. And let yourself bypass everything of your own mind and your own emotions in those situations, and allow yourself to just imagine holding that newborn. This, I would offer, is an experiential definition of human life. And being a question that Jeannie and I have asked quite literally of tens of thousands of people all over the globe in all kinds of different cultures. Everybody pretty much comes up with the same descriptors for the essence of that newborn. And it's words like sweetness, purity, the most common word being that of love. And virtually every other word that people use are some variation on the theme of love. I think that makes it a pretty safe bet that that word is about as close as we get in the English language to describing our essential human nature. And then, of course, we have to confront one of the mega, major errors of the culture, where the word love has been destroyed and turned into something that it is not. Just take a look, you know, what's the number? I think something in the range of about 60% of so-called love relationships, marriages in our culture, end in divorce. Was it a love relationship? Was it based in the sweetness and the purity and the love that we as human beings are? Or do we live in a culture, and this is a proposal I'll make, we live in a culture that has become specialized at knocking the experience out of us of ourselves as love. And then along about the age of 16 or so, sending us out the door to find somebody to love us or find somebody to love. Think of that song. Don't you want somebody to love? Don't you need somebody to love? And on and on and on it goes. But that's not what the word means. If you look at that idea of the word, what you'll find is that it's a venial form of a venial form of approval. Notice people come together and they're all shiny and new, and they are experiencing themselves somewhat as love, but then when their partner resonates some form of hostility or fear in them, what happens to the so-called love, the approval? The approval is withdrawn, and the blame begins. So, no, those are not love relationships. Some of them, because people come together that don't have much hostility or fear, seem to work out fairly well. But they're still not love relationships, unless they're based in a person experiencing themselves as a human being, as the presence of love, and experiencing those around them as the same. And then go back once again to that moment where you held the newborn and tapped into their essence, and then ask yourself the question, is this newborn loving me, or is this newborn love? And it's pretty clear that the newborn isn't loving you. The newborn is a being created of that essential energy called love. And so recognizing that that's who we are as humans, my offering is that the objective of this text that we're working with, the objective of this ancient teaching, because the world wasn't much different 2,000 years ago than it is today in this regard, is people were functioning out of so many variations on the theme of rage and guilt and abuse that love didn't poke its head up very often. Love, I offer, is our human lives. What we're working to do with this particular study and with the work we've garnered from the Kabor's manuscript is to offer people back the tools for them to experience themselves as we truly are, each of us, and to give the tools that were offered to remove those assaults based in hostility or fear that we've each received and end up perceiving through, perceiving ourselves and each other through those assaults. So the objective here is to develop a mindset that matches the Aramaic mindset, where when they said to Yeshua, what's most important in the law? He didn't say to love your neighbor. That's the bastardization of the word. What he instructed people to do, he gave them a tool for experiencing themselves as love. He said, you've got to have rachma. This is a condition in the frontal lobes of the brain that supports us experiencing ourselves as the active presence of love. And once you have that experience, then my offering is, the objective of this work, is to support you in removing every assault that's ever happened in your life, every experience of rage or fear or guilt or pain or drama or trauma that has come into your experience, either through your interaction in the culture, your interaction in your family system, or what entered in your genes that never belonged in a human set of genes. So to apply forgiveness in that regard is the objective of this work. And so the top word on this page 76 in the dictionary in the book Enlightenment, EEK is a root word, and it speaks of a mindset. Again, this Aramaic, when you go to the Greeks, they didn't have a clue. The Greek translations, these mindsets, this idea just, you know, I can remember being a kid and hearing about the Beatitudes. Well, it's a nice story. It's a nice philosophy, but actually, that's not what it is. It's about a set of instructions for how to maintain a mindset that guides you to happiness and well-being, how to maintain your human life. So it becomes a whole different project than the Greek and the Latin stories that had to water down the brilliance of this man's teaching to the level of its own understanding of the teaching, of its own cultural and word meanings. So many of the words in Aramaic are explaining mind structures, explaining literal neural structures that are active in the mind that produce certain forms of behavior, decisions and behavior. So this particular word speaks of a mindset, and I don't know of any other translation of the Aramaic that goes to this depth of comprehension of the meaning of these words. There's nowhere that I've seen this level of comprehension. So this root word eek is a mindset or a mind structure underlying the judgment and behavior we describe as hostile, malicious toward other beings. Now we have a word in our culture that kind of matches this one. This is one of the areas where you can see that via experience, people have gone, oh, there is a certain mindset that leaves people in judgment and behavior that's hostile and malicious towards other people. How do we say that? We don't have a word like this, a root word, eek, as they do in Aramaic. But what's our expression of this? We say, oh, he got out of bed the wrong side this morning. It's got a certain mind structure active. Well, the Aramaic language was expert at describing these mind structures being active. And when a mind structure is active, it directs perception in a certain direction. It directs life in a certain direction. And there's certain mind structures that are desirable and certain ones that aren't. And this is one that isn't. This is one that doesn't support people living as human beings. there's a film out there, if you haven't seen it, entitled I Can Only Imagine. Very powerful film. It's about a young man who, as a kid, his escape from life was music. Pretty abusive childhood. Music was his thing. And he ended up, after all kinds of drama and trauma and interaction with his father, who was brutal with him, yep, going on the road and ending up becoming a Christian museum, musician museum, a Christian musician. And wrote all kinds of beautiful stuff, and in particular this one song. But it's interesting, if you watch the film, and it's a true story of this kid's life, his healing did not come from his interaction with Greek translations of the words of Yeshua as were presented in all of these churches that he sang in. His healing came when his father, who was so brutal, decided to do some work in cleaning up his own mind. And there's a very profound scene in the film where the kid comes back and he's still, you know, he's been doing all this churchianity stuff and he still is peeved. I would use a different word, but we'll avoid it, as he's ever been. And still is enraged with his, quote unquote, with his father as he's ever been. He's still a young man filled with pain and rage. But his father's made some changes. Moving toward, not perfectly yet, but moving toward living as the presence of love. And the film demonstrates very well how in that space, the son begins to heal. The son who's so enraged that he's ready to just run away from his father and has nothing but just putrid energy toward him. But when the father starts to show up as love, and the thing that sort of stimulated me on this was looking at, if you look about a third of the way down the page, and we can look at this word, gmir, all-inclusive. The Aramaic word for perfect is spelled substantially. Remember, there was a quote that said, be perfect. Aramaic word for perfect is spelled substantially the same, but phonetic markings indicate the word in Matthew 5:48 is not perfect, but all-inclusive. So when we experience ourselves as active love, if we've done the work of the Aramaic Yeshua, now, the person who hears about this statement saying, be ye perfect, is going to try to do all kinds of things to live up to somebody's standard. But when you recognize that what was being asked in this particular passage had nothing to do with being perfect as the world would express it. But if we go to Matthew 5:48, thus let your love be all inclusive, even as that of your Father in heaven is all inclusive. So what's being said here is that when you recover your human life, no matter who, no matter what they're doing, you will hold to your human life because it's what you are. It's not what you do. I can't love you. You can't love me. I was talking to someone yesterday, and they'd been around this work for the last 30 years, and they're calling and saying, this has just changed my life so much. And Michael, I love you so much. And kind of tongue-in-cheek, I said, well, actually, I want to let you know that I don't love you at all, and I know that you don't love me, that that's just not true. And they're kind of like, well, what are you talking about? Well, let's get back to who we are. Are you love or do you do love? Behold a newborn. Is a newborn love or is a newborn doing love? And so when you recognize who you are, this particular passage that's referenced in the dictionary on page 76 And when you go back and look at it, what it's saying is you are continuously embraced in an all-inclusive energy field called love by the Creator. And your job as a human being is to be that presence of all embracing love for anybody and everybody and everything that you look at. Well, Michael, what if some terrible, horrible thing happens in the world? All the more important that you show up as a human being rather than as a set of reactions from your genetic past and carbon-based memory that supplants your ability to function as love with some form of judgment, horror, terror, fear, trauma, drama, hatred, whatever. Whatever. So once we recognize that our job, you know, I think we could take this Matthew 5:48 and recognize this is the job assignment. Experience yourself as the presence of love. And when you can't stand in that presence, recognize that you have a mental illness. And your mental illness is whatever the response is from carbon-based memory that blocks you from functioning as conscious, active, present love. Apply forgiveness to that and return to the space where you can function as active, present love. Now, when you see how rapidly, how instantly the mind can come up with its rage and fear games, then you see how quickly love can be displaced by hostility and fear. So on day one, when you get this idea, and you start to move toward the experience of yourself as love, and bring that forward into your world wholly and fully, no matter what's going on in the world, there's going to be failure after 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 failure. I've been doing this work 50 years and I still have failures in that regard. And more, when that failure comes up, and when I talk about failure, I'm talking about losing the ability to hold to my own essence as love, because I still have a carbon-based memory system with 1,000 generations of what have my generations, what have your generations experienced. This work of Yeshua is not for wimps. It's not something where you say one day, oh, okay, I'll be one, and then it's done. It is an ongoing process of growth into recognizing that every response from anywhere in your bloodline that is unlike love is yours to forgive, so that your love, your presence, your being stays present and is all inclusive for whoever, for whatever, for however anyone shows up. Can I bring the light of the active presence of love to this world? That, if you look at it today, it's pretty bizarre and it's pretty insane. If I can. And here's the thing, rather than anyone comparing themselves to somebody else, can you do a better job of it today than you did yesterday? Can you hold to active present love even when your breath resists and all of a sudden some sort of fear or rage or guilt or pain or drama comes forward? Some sort of mental illness. And all of those things are mental illnesses compared to living as a human being that whose presence of being, of love, is all-inclusive. And recognize that that state of all-inclusive love already exists for you to link into. It's called the Creator. Now, those who've never done the work of Yeshua will tell you about how the Creator is wrathful and vengeful and is going to take vengeance for you. I remember doing, I did a workshop Actually, the first time I was in a town of, it might have been the second time, right next to Theodosia, where our teaching center is. And there was a gentleman that was teaching a course on law that I went to. And he was very much into Old Testament and vengeance. Like, nobody could, you know, pulled one over on this guy. And if you tried, he'd make sure to get even. And I had attended his course, and I talked about this work with some people. And that word got around, and he invited me to do a workshop in the context of what he was doing. And I did the why workshop. And afterward, he was like, "Oh, Michael, this is so wonderful. Thank you so much. Now I can stop taking vengeance on people, because if I forgive, then God's going to do the vengeance for me." No, George, that was not what I said. But that was how his mind read it. That was how his perceptual construct ran. So this whole, let's just look at the last few words of this particular passage in Matthew 5:48. Let your love, let the presence of active love in you be all-inclusive, even as that presence of love from the Creator is all-inclusive. There is vengeance. There is no anger. There is no disappointment. There is no pain. There's no getting even. There's no judgment in the Creator. There is simply the all-inclusive presence of active love. This is the mindset. This is the core mindset that comes from Rachma, that we're looking to find enough words in the English language with the state of the world today to bring this point across. And that as we learn to hook up to that, and the way we hook up directly to that is through the breath. We have a direct connection to that all-inclusive love. And our direct connection to that all-inclusive love is the breath of the Creator. In Aramaic, where the Greeks tell us that the Creator sent out its breath, does not say that in Aramaic. Pardon me, the Greeks tell us it sent out his spirit. It does not say that in Aramaic. It says the Creator sent out its breath. So you and I can directly connect to the eternal active presence of love in which we live, move, and have our being through breath. And I'll just say that in 45 years that since I discovered for me the still point breathing process and been teaching it, I don't care how deep, how painful, how traumatic, how insane, how bizarre, how outrageous the circumstance is and the trauma moving within someone is, that breath knows how to quell that energy and bring healing. And it's available to us from the inside all the time. And so this would be a gathering words to get the point across of what it is we're looking to do. When the Greeks, the Latins, told us about this vengeful, wrathful creature that instructed the murder of millions, and on and on and on go the atrocities. what we're looking to do is to adopt the mindset that empowers us to comprehend. Or I shouldn't say empowers us, because that indicates like maybe there's some empowerment out there somewhere. No, the empowerment is within us. It's uncovering the empowerment. Breathe into that for a moment and recognize that the empowerment to live in and as conscious, active, present love is inside of you. And the tool that will diffuse all pain and trauma in your life is as close as your breath. And just allow yourself to just kind of be in the space of that and breathe. Connect your breath so that the in-breath and the out-breath flow as a unit. And recognize that there is an all-inclusive presence of love in our world, and all we need to do to follow the lead of that presence is to breathe. So joining you in breathing, and notice that when some form of hostility or fear is triggered, notice what happens to your breath. It is the shutting down of the breath that leaves us in trauma. You'll notice that the person who has, as the first word in this dictionary page, page 76, at the top of the page, eek, is a mindset or structure underlying judgment and behavior we describe as hostile or malicious toward other human beings. Notice that someone who's in that mindset does not have their breath moving fully. So, if a mindset of some form of malice, iki in Aramaic, and then if you just move down a little bit, about a third of the way down the page, before we get to the mirror, look at the word Gehenna as you breathe. A valley outside of Jerusalem where refuse was dumped, and where the fires of leopards excluded from the town burnt nightly. This is the word that's been translated as hell. As though love could possibly create a place in which people would burn for eternity. Was the Gehenna. It was a fiery place. It was a garbage dump, and they burned garbage there, and people who died, who couldn't afford a funeral, their bodies were taken there to be burned. It was a hellish place, and it was a threat they used with little kids would take you to the Gehenna. When their parents or the people's mind was not connected to active love, when they were not in this commune mindset. And they found it worked pretty well with little kids, so they created one for big people. And people are still running around threatening little kids. people are still running around threatening adults. It's a fiery place. A specific threat designed to inspire fear, which is the exact opposite of all embracing love. So in the name of all embracing love, we have people threatening the opposite. In order to get people to go to all embracing love, or pretend to them that they're going to get there by being in this fear, it's such an insane conflict. So allow your breath to be restored to any part of you that's ever been threatened. Threatened by those who didn't know any better. With any form of punishment. What were you trying to escape from? What form of hell was it that you were afraid of? What form of fear was used to keep you under control? Breathe into it. And at this point, as you breathe, tap into the highest, clearest, most powerful present love that you can. And letting go of the world for a moment, rather than having to take on the whole world and think of all inclusive for the whole world, just allow yourself to tap into that presence of love. And allow yourself to breathe that presence of love into every cell in your own structure. Just let that all-embracing love permeate your own body. And you do that by breathing into it. If thoughts surface that you deserve something other than that, or you don't deserve that, or you can't have that, or whatever, notice those are thought disorders that are lies that don't support you living a truly human life. And just breathe through them and let go of them. And with your inner eye, notice that the trillions of cells in your structure. Imagine you can see them. Those cells, and in each one of them there is a light. And as you focus on them and fuel those cells with your breath, imagine and watch that light expand. As you breathe, just allow the light in each cell to expand to the borders of each cell itself. And as you fuel even deeper with your breath, imagine you can see that light expanding beyond the borders of those trillions of cells in your own structure. And experience the light moving in each of those cells, joining with the light in every other cell, and expanding until your whole physiological system is filled with light. And then imagine that your nearest neighbor, the person closest to you right now, and remembering that in Aramaic the word neighbor means anyone you think about, imagine that they too are experiencing being filled with this light. And in the same way that the light expanded out from the cells in your structure and joined with the light in other cells, imagine that this light inside of you now expands beyond you and meets that expanding light from your neighbor. And by doing so, it joins and it strengthens as you breathe. And imagine that you're able to look out from your inner eye and see throughout your whole neighborhood. Do you see that light that is in each person in your neighborhood? Looking through your inner eye and imagination, the ability to image in this truth, you see that light expanding in each neighbor, joining in a light the whole neighborhood. And so now every person in the neighborhood is reflecting their light back to you as you expand your light toward them. By the way, if you think that's an impossibility, let me just share a text that I got this morning. I had a young lady who's an attorney from Montreal, Canada, that had come down here last week and done a 3-day personal interview. A young lady who's in her, I'm not sure exactly, 40s or so. And had never heard the words from her father of approval. He lives in a foreign country, other side of the globe. She went back to Montreal, having done some pretty deep inner work. And in her first conversation with her father over the phone from the other side of the country, this is a woman in her 40s. She hears from the first time, hears the words, "I'm proud of you." She shared that with me last week. The text she shared with me this morning was, "I've never heard those words from my father. And every day since I've gotten home, he said that to me on the phone. I've talked to him every day. And he's told me how proud he is of me." She'd been working that for her whole life, working for that. And now, as she has forgiven that part of her that put herself down, her father, literally from the other side of the world over the telephone, reflects the light, the truth, back to her that she is worthy. Imagine that every person within your neighborhood is reflecting their light back in your direction, as your love is all-inclusive. You inspire that in others. And the light of each person within your community expands, joins with the light in each other person in your community, and that light just explodes out into the world. You'll remember there's a line in the worksheet that says, "When I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone." This is a principle of physics. This isn't theology. The energy that you choose to expand literally touches others And in the same way that if I had a middle C tuning fork on a desk and I put it near a second middle C tuning fork, that second tuning fork has no choice. It goes into sympathetic resonance with the tuning fork that's moving, and it too starts to move. So allow yourself to breathe and be that all-inclusive presence of love, and watch how that light from your community expands out to the borders of your state. And breathe. Remember, this is not your breath. This is literally the breath of the Creator that you're breathing. And connect it even more deeply in your physiology. Notice if there are any tension points within your structure. But as you take the breath to those tension points, they soften. And when that tissue softens, the light within it expands and heals. And as the light from your enlightened community expands out, see it literally reaching out to the borders of your state and touching every person within your state. When you choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. When you become the presence of love, that presence of love tends to expand out. And as you see the millions of people in your state, or if you're in another country, in your country, see that light then redoubling and expanding out beyond the borders of your state or your country into surrounding states and surrounding countries. Know that we have people from all over the world in our conversation today. That light moving literally around the globe. Yeshua 2,000 years ago said, I am the light of the world. And he expanded his light. And then the only thing he changed was a pronoun, and he said, you are the light of the world. Let go of the bushel baskets of fear, rage, guilt, pain, loss, and trauma. Let them be melted in the presence of this light and this love. And think about that. One person has been a major challenge for you. And then at the same time as you think about them, imagine a person that it's easy for you to extend this love to. And imagine that they are side by side. The person who's your challenge, the person that's easy to be loved in the presence of. And see the light that you extend to that person that's easy to be the presence of love for. Be extended and encompass that person that perhaps previously you've labeled enemy. And breathe. And notice that unless there's fear in you, some fear that perhaps you've projected onto that person, there's no inhibitor to extending that love, that all-embracing love to that person who perhaps maybe you called the enemy. And breathe. You are the light of the world. As you breathe, notice whether or not there are any tension points within your own structure. Notice if there are any tension points that resist the presence of that love in you. Soften and breathe into those tension points. And as you do, you'll be restoring that light to your own tissue structure and to those who are a symbol of your resistance, those who perhaps you've called enemy. And just allow, literally allow yourself to follow this directive. Let your love be all embracing. Not perfect, but literally including everyone, 7.5 billion people embraced in your light. And because you've chosen love, it begins a process of resonance that activates that presence of love in every other person. And know that you are the light of the world. Breathing with you. And if there's any fear of that idea that we've been fed about the Gehenna, about the fiery place, allow it to soften within you and let the light in. And then as you breathe, we'll move from that word mere, all-inclusive, as in Matthew 5:48. And then we'll look at the note under the structure of it with the suffix that includes two I's, so kmiri. And that suffix indicates that this is a quality you possess. Because it is what you are. down a few word definitions to Himyon, the structure of mind underlying the attitudes and judgment we describe as faith or trust, as in having faith in a true presence of all-embracing, all-inclusive love in which you live, move, and have your being, the Creator. Not a religious idea, just the fact that energetically you live within the structure of all-embracing love. Remember how powerful a healing force that is. When you listen to Yeshua talking about that woman who needed to touch the hem of his garment to be healed, felt that all she needed was that support of that extra energy boost. And you remember when they wanted to make him responsible for his healing, he said, no, it was her faith, her expression. Brought about her healing. And know that you are one with what the Aramaics called Hemna, one who has fidelity, faith, and trust. So here you stand, as the light of the world, in fidelity, faith, and trust, ready for the next level of work, ready for the next piece of work that you individually are going to need to do in order to maintain this state. Thank you, you, the light of the world, for being with us today, and have the best year yet of your eternal life.